On the East Coast, and you know what time that is. It's time for another edition of the Cool Down Lap. This is the podcast of Midwest Motorsports, which you can catch every Monday night at 9 o'clock, where we review the past week's races, what's upcoming this week, as well as go through the series, interview some winning drivers, other people that drop in. Tonight we have a new segment starting tonight, a weekly segment with James Johnson. He is the voice of Midwest Motorsports, and we'll be doing the Road Series weekly update, where James Johnson, who does quite a bit of announcing, and I help him out on the Truck Series on Friday nights, will be doing the weekly update and talking to some drivers. Hopefully he can get the winners every week to stop in, and that's what we do here. Tonight, our guest is Dustin Rheinstettel. He not only does our social media, he just won the Daytona Duels for the Truck Series the other night. And that's what we have going on. And then this coming weekend, Season 1 starts, and we'll be talking about that with Eric and Justin and John, James Johnson, and Dustin. So now I want to introduce, from the Truck Series, the winner on the Truck Series duel at Daytona. He also, as I just said, is our social media guy, Dustin Rheinstettel. Good evening, Dustin. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Not too bad. So tell us how you did in the Truck Series the other night. We know you won it. How did you pull it off? How'd you find the field? And being that it's only 40 laps, what kind of strategy can you have in 40 laps?
Well, honestly, there's really no real strategy for super speedways other than just kind of wait until the last 5 laps or so. But duels are interesting because they're not really points other than your pole that you can get. But it's kind of very aggressive, I guess. So it was pretty fun to be able to just kind of hang loose for 30, 40 laps, and no stage breaks or anything like that. So it was a little bit of a wreck fest, as usual for super speedways.
Yep.
Especially being the first race of the season for the league, and being a non-points race, so everybody was being aggressive, of course. Quite a few 3-wide battles that probably shouldn't have been so early. But I think I only ended up with one incident, and it was really, I think, the biggest wreck we had a couple laps in. It was, I think I went all the way to the wall on the inside through the grass to miss it, and I still almost didn't miss it. So it ended up working out, but definitely raced way more aggressive than what I would have if it was a race that counted towards points or counted towards their incident count. It's a little easier to go 3-wide knowing that your 4X isn't going to count if you get it one.
That's true.
But those are a little harder to make happen when it actually matters.
Right. So how did fuel strategy play in for you if it was a wreck fest? For instance, on last night in the Cup Series, there was a wreck. The first caution came out, I want to say, around lap 9 or 10. I stayed out, or whatever the lap was. Everybody else went in, so it hurt me for a little bit, but not too long. So when your fuel capacity is going to take you about half the race, and there is a yellow that comes out, do you go in early, or do you stay out and hope for another caution later on?
Usually I like to just go ahead and go in the pits. Most of the race, I like to just hang out in the back, because my philosophy is as long as you're in a position where you can go with 5 to go, you can win it. But if you're stuck in the back too long, if you're in the front and getting a wreck, there's just all kinds of things that can happen that can throw it off.
Sure.
But as far as fuel mileage goes, it really didn't play a factor. I don't think in the truck race. I think I pitted whenever I realized that I would have like 4 or 5 laps to go after, or I would have 4 or 5 laps left if we went a couple of green light checkers, and ended up not having to pit any through those. So that kind of helped maintain field position But that's kind of just how you play it. It really just depends. If there's a big field left and there's still 20 laps to go, even if I can make it on fuel, I'll probably still pit just to kind of cycle back to the rear of the field. Because really, there's kind of the two ways of looking at it, either being the front or being the back. So just using those cautions to either get yourself to the front or to the back, whichever one makes you comfortable.
So did you have to use your quick repair?
I didn't in the truck race. In the Xfinity race, I definitely had to quite a few times. Well, at least once, I believe. I think I didn't use it the first wreck, but I definitely used it the second one. Xfinity didn't go as good as trucks.
Oh, so you're only going to be here for one segment tonight. That's why. Okay.
Yeah.
Tires. I ran the whole race on one set because I figured taking a pit stop in that 14 seconds there plus the time to drive in and out wasn't worth the risk. What about you?
It really just depends on the car. At Daytona with the cup car, they can get a little loose when you have low fuel. So you kind of have to manage that a little bit. If you get, you know, 30, 40 laps on your tires, then it might be beneficial to go ahead and take a set if you know you're going to have a long fuel run. But I don't think I've ever taken a set under green. It's usually something that I'll decide on caution.
Exactly.
But as far as the duals go, I think I used my set just to use it to stack me to the back during a pit stop. I used it about halfway, I believe. But, yeah, it's sometimes you can – night races, I guess, are a little better on tires. I've never really looked at tire wear at Super Speedway. The only time I think I've ever noticed tires is last year in the season opener. I got wrecked, and iRacing did some kind of glitch where it didn't read my tires after I towed, and I actually drove around on what basically felt like four flat tires. They wouldn't read anything for the tires, so that was interesting. But no, you really don't have any tire issues. You could probably not use them at all during an entire race and not have any issues with Xfinity or trucks. Cup car, the only thing would be getting loose on the top lane coming out of the exit of the turns.
Yeah, I noticed that last night because both times when I had to go in for fuel, I waited, like you said, until like less than five laps, and I think I did it with like 2.5 laps on one fuel change. And like you said, you definitely know the car shaking a little bit. In the truck race, how did drafting come into play for you?
The trucks are fun. You can draft with them pretty much at any track that's over a mile. So Super Speedways are really fun in the trucks. You can hook up with as little as two cars and kind of make some moves if you can side draft a little bit. So drafting was fun. I'm trying to remember. It was such a short race. You kind of just worked with whoever you could work with.
Sure.
Usually we get a pretty good group together with our admin guys that run on Super Speedways. But trucks, I think it was just really just Josh and Norm. Norm's going to kill me for calling him Josh. Josh is going to kill me for calling him Norm. Either one.
Nick.
But yeah, I had a little bit of motivation. I can't go this entire podcast without calling JT out now after the last one. But during the Twitch, our broadcast, I got pulled in for an interview with a couple laps left. And James let me know that JT was, you know, giving me down the road in the Twitch broadcast. So gave me some extra motivation. But now that I think about it, I actually got really lucky towards the end of the race. There was a caution with just a couple to go, and the timing loop must have got me right whenever I got pushed out in front in the top lane. And got the restart, and controlling that inside lines key if you're trying to win. You can win on the outside lane, but on the inside lane you don't have to worry about anybody passing you on the left, so it makes it a little easier to just have to worry about one person coming high.
So where did you qualify?
For the dual race, I think it was bad. I don't know what I'm doing during qualifying, but The Xfinity race was the same way. It was a little better, but I actually just went ahead and ran. I killed my first lap and just ran high the whole time, and then jumped down and did the whole turn down on the trioval part and run the yellow line. But I was almost 2 seconds slower. So it's definitely at night. It's definitely a first lap deal at Daytona. For some reason, I was thinking it was 2. Maybe during the day it's 2, but definitely my worst qualifying effort. I think it was like 13th or 14th, something like that. But that's just one of the things. Like, even after the duels, starting on the pole next or this week, it's, yeah, I'll probably try to stay out for the stage and get some stage points for that first 2 stages. If it starts getting too wild, though, I'm definitely not going to stay up there. It's qualifying doesn't matter a whole lot outside of the stage points starting the race.
Gotcha. So it's the race this weekend is, what, 60 laps at Daytona?
Yeah. Something like that, Greg. Okay. Honestly, in the trucks, it'll be, you know, a little bit. It might be 75, to be honest with you, Greg.
It is 75.
Yeah. It is, yeah. 75. Yeah.
I just changed the page there, and it came up.
Yeah, we went to a little longer of a schedule in the trucks this season, so it'll be fun.
So what's your strategy for opening week at Daytona, knowing that it's 75 laps? And, well, I think you just said that you're going to try to get better qualifying and be up front for the first stage, and then if it's hairy, hang out in the back. So if you're going to hang out in the back, at what point do you decide that you got to start moving up front, with or without a bunch of yellows in the way?
It kind of depends. There's a couple ways to do it at Daytona. You can use the cautions. You can not go in for a pit stop, which is a little risky, depending on how many laps you have left, which I think we're doing, what is it, Eric, 75% race and 75% fuel?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, so you got a little bit more wiggle room on laps. Like, so when you get down towards the end of the race, if you can have it fueled up, if you could somehow manage the caution before the last caution, with, you know, however many we go, which we all know there's always going to be that late race caution at Daytona, until there's not, right? But it's just one of those things. You can do it that way. You can try to work a top line. That's one thing I realized in the last part of the truck race. I made a move going from, I took a couple people through wide, and they kind of backed out of it, and got a spot that way, and then was able to do a crossover move to get back to the inside. Tried the same exact thing in Xfinity, and it didn't work. So it's just one of those things that sometimes you can get a good enough run, and maybe somebody's checking up at the same time going into a corner, and you can jump a couple cars. But really, you got to have help. And that's what super speedways come down to. It was actually Mark Cochran, I believe, that pushed me on the inside so well. So it definitely helps having somebody to push that is a good pusher. We've seen that in the Xfinity race a little bit. Some of the guys were a little timid with pushing, which is, it's okay. It's part of it at super speedway. Some people are more comfortable than others. And honestly, if you're not comfortable pushing, it's probably a good thing that you don't try to, unless you get some practice, because it's pretty easy to turn people if you don't know how to do it correctly or at what points of the track to do it.
Yeah, I found that Xfinity cars are pretty easy to turn if you're not too well-versed at drafting, or if the person in front of you can't hold their line. That's the biggest thing that I've been pushing some guys down the track, and they just can't hold their line, and then they end up spinning and sometimes taking you and the whole field at it at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, being on a simulator, it's not real life, so, of course, it's always feels tighter than what it probably really is at some times. So holding lines is always difficult. It's not the easiest thing to do going through right at Daytona. Talladega is a little different. Daytona is a whole other animal.
Yeah, especially like when you're running pickup cup or carb cup, and it's on the old Daytona with all the bumps and grinds in it. It's almost impossible to hold a line.
That's crazy. There's nothing like, as far as drafting goes, in the other series, there's nothing like getting a Ford to help you out. They're usually the best pushers.
Ah, interesting. Didn't know that.
Even though JT won't push anybody.
There you go.
Really?
Steering ratio. I kind of like my steering ratio so that it's a little stiff, and I know it wears out on the tires quicker that way, but I'm not comfortable with a loose steering wheel. So what's your opinion on that on the super speedways versus other ones?
So the super speedways, I'm kind of the opposite of most people. Especially in our Discord, there was a lot of going back and forth about what steering ratios new guys needed to use and people that don't practice and things like that. And really the best advice I can give you for steering ratio for super speedways is just go set up a practice session or a race and keep throwing cautions if you have issues. But just try a couple of steering ratios and offsets. Personally, I usually go to the second lowest one, depending on which car it is. I started iRacing with a Logitech wheel. Mm-hmm. So those gear-driven wheels, you could almost lock into place with a high force feedback and low steering ratio. So I actually got used to it that way, of just going into the corner, keeping the wheel in the same place and not worrying about moving it. So for me, I've gotten used to that. I don't have to really worry about the car moving around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice in the Xfinity cars, it's of course even worse with the Cup cars because it's a bigger car, or you know, feels a little different than the others with the steering that it has. When you get loose coming out of the corner, or when you've got a big run coming out of the corner right behind another car, if your car does start to move, it is really hard to kind of gather it up quickly with a low steering ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas usually on other ovals, you can usually catch it a little easier that way. But you definitely move a lot. I got loose coming out of two, pushing the leader of the outside lane in the Xfinity race. And I almost didn't think I was going to save it. I think I was chasing it back and forth, left and right, all the way down the back stretch. So it's really just what you get comfortable with. Some guys use the high steering ratio, some the low. For me, I found in the draft, because I like to push. I'll get pushed all anybody wants to, but I feel like I'm more productive when I push.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I push, I like to have a low steering ratio just because I don't have to move it as much. And I can kind of guess now where I'm at on the track when I need to turn the wheel without really looking off the bumper in front of me. But it's all user preference. I use the low steering ratios, but I also change the offset because I don't like for my wheel to be pointed way to the right. So usually super speedways, they're at like 1 or 2 o'clock, it seems like, on the standard offset. So I like to change it to where it's a little more neutral at the top.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, on regular ovals, okay, it's always a little different per track because, like you said, the tires. So regular ovals, it's also the same thing. You just kind of have to practice what you like.
Yeah.
My first year in the league, I couldn't figure out why I kept getting smoked on long runs by Eric and Ben and some of the other guys. And I finally started using a higher steering ratio, which I still usually only use like a 12 or a 14. I'm not really a 16-to-1 kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that actually really helped me with my driving style to save tires a little better. You can turn faster laps sometimes, it feels like, with low steering ratios. But like you mentioned earlier, you definitely kill the tires a lot quicker if you don't know how to do it.
Yeah, I usually like to set around a 12 or a 14. So, question for you on drafting at Daytona. In last night's race, we had, let's say we got a line of three cars, and we're going into turn one and two, and you always get a good run coming out of two. And all of a sudden, on the high end, the high side, here comes a car by itself and is actually battling the lead car in our pack on the back stretch. When you got a train of three cars, how does one car manage to at least until the beginning of turn three, run side by side with the lead pack car?
Are we talking about in passing, or just that it drove up?
It drove up, there, and it almost overtook the lead car in our three car pack going into turn three. But of course, at that point, for some reason, they just drifted back. But I'm always amazed when a car comes out of nowhere, and sometimes that happens in the dog leg too. It just a solo car will come in on the high side with nobody around and kind of, you know, give that lead car in a 3 or 4 car pack a run for the money for a while. Is that because someone's really good at side drafting coming out of turns?
Yeah, so it could be side drafting. It could be there's a couple things. If the bottom line's not as tight as it needs to be, a lot of the times the power of the line, you know, it not only comes from the first car in line that's pushing, but also the third car. If they're not close, then that second car doesn't have any help. So it's basically like you're in a long line, but it's really just two cars pushing. If the third guy's, you know, not pushing but close enough to break that air, the air gap, then it'll help out. But it can be side drafting. I also just learned recently, if you're in a single line, it's almost better to be the second row up instead of on the inside, because the inside line checks, due to where, I guess, where you get the runs and that, you know, you're tighter around the bottom. So it's a lot easier if somebody hits the apron. There's all kinds of different ways to check up on the inside. Whereas if you're running, you know, full throttle on the second lane up as a single file line, nobody really has to lift. The runs come at the same time. So I'm not really sure how it works like that. I guess it's just the better way around. But you can also do that on the top lane. It's just a little harder to keep the runs coming from the second car if you're in the main top lane at the right line.
That makes sense. Another league I was in, some of the best drivers as far as force feedback, they would get out there and run the practice before the race, and then after, I don't know, let's say 7 or 8 laps, they would go to the black box and just click auto for force feedback. Do you do that, or do you like to set a certain level for the way the track is that day or who's racing around you?
I usually do auto. One thing I like to do at Super Speedways is whenever I get into practice, the first thing I'll do is go run a lap or two, either at Talladega or Daytona, whichever one, in the top lane. So Daytona is a little tighter at that white line to the wall. So it just kind of gets you in check of holding your line, making sure your steering ratio and offset's where it needs to be. And then I do the force feedback at the same time. So I'll run 2 laps, I'll hit auto, and then if I don't feel like that's enough, I might give it 1 or 2 clicks up. I usually do up more than I do down after I do auto, just because that kind of helps me keep the wheel a little tighter, it seems like.
Okay, anybody have any questions for Dustin? Or you want to try to steal some of his secrets for this weekend?
No, Jeez, man, if you let me get a word in here. I was on a miserable flight home Friday from Phoenix back home that was delayed a lot longer than it needed to be. So I actually was able, since it was a pretty short race, I literally got to, like, the last caution. And I didn't get to see the finish. But, I mean, some people might say that I was just giving Dustin a hard time, but I was actually really supportive of him in the Twitch chat, so I just hope he realizes that.
Just to say that so everybody knows, me and JT do not hate each other officially.
Officially. Okay.
But it, from what I saw, it looked like a really good turnout. We had a lot of trucks on the grid, and I'm excited for it. So it should be a really good season with a. Hopefully a lot of competition and keep the grid sizes, you know, we're up where we want them, and it'll probably be a pretty good battle with all those people signed up. So I'm looking forward to the truck series for sure.
It sounds like it's going to be interesting. It's just that I would love to race. I just don't have any more time to do anything but what I'm doing now, and then picking up the Sunday night series there. So, well, Dustin, you can hang out for the rest of the podcast, but if you gotta take a run, I just want to say thanks for stopping in and giving us all your secrets there. And I've wrote some information down if I ever race against you, and if you're in a race with me, I will push and hope you push back.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I should be able to run all 3 series for the most part this year.
Oh, cool.
Cup series will be a little iffy in the spring. due to the golf schedule that we have.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, look forward to it. Do just want to state one thing, that contrary to popular belief, I am not a Denny Hamlin fan. One thing that a lot of people seem to say in the league, wonder who. But, no, just thankful to you guys. The podcast is awesome every week.
Appreciate
thankful
that.
To James. Broadcasts are great. Yep. Had a really good time going back and watching this last one. And then, of course, Eric and JT and all the other admin staff. This is not just because I'm an admin here. Definitely the hands down the best league that I've ever been a part of, and been able to take pride in helping admin as well.
I definitely second that. And it was really great when Justin and Eric were on the podcast. I think it's about, man, it's like 3 months ago now. We've been doing this podcast for almost 2 months, I think.
Yeah.
And it's, yep. And it's just been, it's been great. And then it was such a good show that we had together. I contacted the guys the next morning and I said, hey, you want to do a league podcast? And then, you know, they say, hey, let's get with the admins. And that's what I really like. So, no, it's been fun and it's going to be fun racing. So I'm looking forward to it. And Hambone 2499, first time on the chat, says, I'll do my best to push you. I don't know if he's talking about me or you, but anybody. He says, gonna have to do some practice. So, oh,
hey, we'll all take pictures, right?
One more before you go. As far as practicing on your own, do you like to do the AI or just get out and run laps by yourself?
I'm going to be honest. Whenever I first came in the league, I was getting beat in so many different ways, whether it was pitting or strategy or just race pace. I really put a lot of time in with AI, just trying to get used to being around other cars. So it kind of just varies. Now, if I do any practice, you know, you get to a certain point where you run, you know, the same cars at the same tracks and the same setups, with the fixed setups, that you kind of get used to most of the stuff after a while. So I don't practice as much as I used to.
Got it.
But I definitely do a lot on my own now. Or like I'll throw up a test session and post it if anybody wants to join. So it's just whatever somebody feels comfortable with.
Gotcha. I found AI, at least last year, was hilarious because I don't know if it was just happened to be a coincidence or AI is getting that smart, but I would just go around and wreck people just to see what would happen. And then I find out that when they come up on you, they seem to remember that you wrecked them. So they're wrecking you back. So I got to watch out for that. Cause those AI cars are getting pretty smart. Okay. Now it's time to bring in James Johnson, the voice of Midwest Motorsports, for our new feature every week, the Road Series Review. And James Johnson, take it away. It's all yours.
Hey, Greg. How's Thanks a lot for having us tonight.
Oh, you're welcome.
Doing great, man. Doing great. Once again, I want to congratulate Dustin on a great truck run. Dustin is the previous season truck champion, by the way, so let's not forget that. No surprise that he's going to start on the pole at Daytona this week. So congratulate again to Dustin for that. The Road Series race was at Spa this week. It was round 5. So pretty amazing. We had 25 cars enter. 25 cars at Spa. And Spa is a pretty big track. 4.5 miles about. So they spread out, but they had a good qualifying session. Johan de Roy put it on pole for the pros. And he's known as the alien in the league because he had a really good run of the F3 series as well. So no surprise that he's really fast. So it's showing, flexing his muscle again early in the season. It was I don't know if you've done any laps at Spa, Greg. Are you familiar with the Spa track?
I have not done many of the overseas tracks at all.
Yeah, pretty famous track. Formula One goes there. They have a 24-hour GT race there too. So some of the guys that run our road series also do some other sessions on iRacing with the different tracks that we run in our series. So it's pretty exciting. But no surprise that Johan DeRoy was on the pole. So then the race starts, and man, it's at night, which is pretty cool. It made for a little tough broadcast. Our camera guy, Colin, had a big ask in front of him to get the right camera angles and know where the head-on cameras were, so we just not looking at headlights the whole time. He did a great job. So we get a start, and the first lap, I think all the GT4 racers know that they do an incident review on the first lap. So most of the time, the first lap is pretty clean. Again, a 25-car field, the first couple of turns at Spa are pretty tight, pretty fast, and then a long straight into another fast section. So anyway, it's pretty amazing that they all made it through La Source, which is a really tight hairpin right, known for first turn pileups. They all made it through. Get to the first series, they drop single file down a long straight. I mean, this tells you how excited I am about this season, because we're like 2 minutes in already and I'm talking about the first lap still. Just really impressed with all these GT4 road racers. You can tell they've all practiced. Let's see, I can tell you that Johan DeRoy, his pole time was almost exactly what his fast lap time was. So it definitely wasn't his first laps on the track for qualifying. Get around, a couple of incidents. We won't talk about those. They got reviewed. We'll talk about those maybe afterwards for a post-race penalty when we talk about the penalties. But at the end of the first lap, there's a right-left chicane that's really tight. And the first four cars went too wide. Now, this is 4.5 miles later through lots of, or 20 turns. 19 and 20 are the chicane. So 20 turns, and they're still too wide, two rows deep. I tried to get a screenshot. Didn't really work the way I wanted it to, so I didn't send it to you. But if anybody gets a chance to watch the replay on YouTube, Midwest Motorsports is a YouTube channel. You can see the first lap is real clear that top four were too wide. Jason Phillips, Johan DeRoy, Shay McNeely, and Max Bauer side by side in a really tight right hand and left hand, and then they single file again by the time they get to the start finish straight. So it was just not something that you see an unusual road course. Definitely not something you see in an open lobby. So super impressed with that. Max Bauer then on lap number two crashes on his own. Later in the lap, turn 13 and 14, is a right-hander and a left-hander. Just got a little bit of snap oversteer. So a guy that was going for the lead, or fighting for the lead, right behind, the lead battle. Now it goes from first to 13th on the second lap. So he's working from the back now. Pretty exciting. Then there's four-way battles up and down the field. Lap 7, 4th through 6th, we're all battling super tight. I can go on and make leads. Finally, we get down to lap 19 and 20. Let's see, they go for 60 minutes. So they ended up with 24 laps. So with 3 laps to go, Jason Phillips, Johan DeRoy are still slicing and dicing. I mean, they're switching position just about 2 or 3 times a lap. Some lead follow up to that point. These are after pit stops at 30 minutes, so everybody stopped once for tires. That's not a surprise. I think we're going to be able to stop just once on every track the way the fuels work out, so that's not going to be a a huge strategy. Whether you take tires or not might be a strategy point, but I think most everybody can do 60 minutes on a set of tires too, so should be no tire changes. This is the case for Spa as well. Yeah, so they come across the line. Johan DeRoy and Jason Phillips side by side. Jason Phillips gets them just barely, less than a second. I mean, less than half a second between first and second after 1 hour. So I hope that gives you an idea of how close these guys are. And third place, Shay McNeely was only 3 seconds behind them. So it's pretty awesome race, a fun race to call. If you get a chance, it's also up on the YouTube channel, as they all the Midwest Motorsports races get put up on YouTube about a week afterwards. So I don't know if that's enough. If you want to go into more, we are doing Pro and Am, so I should give the Am guys a little shout too. David Wortman and let's see, I believe it's Sam Hubbard. No, Justin Glickner. Came across the line less than a second apart from each other, too. So shout out to David Wortman. We got to interview him after the race. Said that he had a lot of practice with some help from Christopher Hopper. It's really cool to watch the Discord and see the guys throw up practice lobbies. So if you're in the GT4 League and want some pointers, keep an eye on the Discord. There's a lot of practice sessions thrown up that you can join. And, you know, lead follow sessions or maybe pick up some pointers in the upcoming race. So that's pretty much the update from Spa. It was an amazing race. Next week they go to Suzuka. Suzuka, Japan is the next race. So pack your chopsticks, get ready to eat some good sushi, and come join us for Suzuka, Japan tomorrow night. 7 o'clock practice start.
I hear there's a good sale on sushi from Fukushima.
Yeah. Radioactive, right?
Yep.
Special glowing kind when it shows up to your table.
Yeah, well, you're going to get all your iodine you need. Okay. Hey, James, that was really good. James, that was really good. Do you have the points for Road Series? You want me to do those? Is he still there?
I have them, but I'm happy to share them if you want to go for it.
Go ahead. This is your segment.
I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you, James.
All right, Greg. Can you hear me, Greg?
Yes, I can. Go ahead and do the points. This is your segment here.
Okay, there might be a little bit of a lag, but it's all right. Okay. All right, no problem. Thanks again for hosting us, Greg. So, let's see. I got the AM. Let me go back to the Pro. Go to Sim Racer Hub is your go-to place. If anybody is on there, you know, looking for a place where you find the points or the series standings. Sim Racer Hub, midwest-motorsports.com is the league. You search there, the little drop-down menus, look for the Road Series, will be pretty clear. So, Johan DeRoy is currently leading the points. Shay McNeely in second, Max Bauer third. It's pretty interesting. Shay McNeely only has raced in 4 of the 5 races so far, and he's still second in points. And I will say also, it's a little bit early to be looking at points. It's a 20-race season, but 2 of your points, your 2 lowest points drop. So right now, these are with no drops. You have to do 10 races in order to drop. My guess is a lot of the guys are going to do more, if not all, 18 race counting points races. So you probably have to do all 18 at least if you want to be in the top levels of points. But yeah, shout out to Johan DeRoy. He had a bad run. Dropped out 1 week. I forget which one it was. Is it Brands Hatch? Maybe the week before that. But anyway, he dropped out, disconnected. He had a drive-through penalty. I think that was Nürburgring. He was too many off-tracks. So got a drive-through penalty, and that dropped him to the bottom of the field. I think he just pulled over and parked it. But he's still leading the points without any drops by 42 points. So, you know, there are bonus points. There's lots of ways to earn points in the road series. Fastest lap, leading a lap, the most positions gained get you points. So, you know, there's a lot to race for throughout the season. So still early in the season to be looking at points, but definitely some big movers. Justin Thaler, currently fifth in points. Not bad, Justin. You were at Spa. Let's get a little feedback on your run at Spa, and I'll try not to break up any talking points.
Well, that was absolutely terrible. Had a one of the lap one incidents, so rightfully so. I'll be starting from the pit lane tomorrow night at Suzuka, but I like my pace would have been there, but got caught up in something, had some terrible damage. Was wondering why I was so slow. Pretty much trying to work my way back through the field, use my fast repair, and my second flying lap after that, I shaved off quite a bit of time, so I wasn't aware my damage was that bad, but it just sucks for me because that's one of my favorite courses, but it'll be on the schedule next season, so we're just looking forward to tomorrow night.
I thought it was a pretty good recovery drive, Justin, considering, you know, that you, not only did you just spin, but, you know, got into confrontation and then off in the gravel and still recovered to have a relatively decent run. You know, it'll probably be a points counting race for you, depending on how the rest of them go. But you did go and you did, you know, you have a pit lane start next week. And I will say that when the admins talked about it and, you know, you took it on the chin and owned up to it and, you know, you're not, you know, oblivious to the rules. The rules apply to everybody. And that's another thing that I like about Midwest Motorsports is that, you know, the rules are there for everybody. Everybody follows them so that everybody has the same chance to win, man. So get on you. We'll put it behind you and move on to Suzuka.
Thanks.
What are you going to do with turn one in Suzuka? I love that course, but turn one has got to be one of the most difficult turns on a road course because it is so sharp and the track is not very wide at that point.
Yeah, so you almost, it is very hard. So like you almost want to hit the entry because basically it's turn one. It's kind of a kink. Like you said, the track narrows down, but then it goes into another kind of a sweeping right-hander. It's mm-hmm. it's not a very high-speed right-hander, but it's not right. A slow speed. But you almost kind of want to hit the kink and actually break in a straight line uphill to the outside curbing. Okay. And then kind of just come off of the brakes easy, get the car rotated to make your way through the S's. But these GT4 cars, they don't have a huge amount of downforce. And in order to kind of be quick with them, you really want that brake bias set as far back as you can manage it. So the rear end will dance quite a bit on you. So it's going to be tricky because you're going to want to carry some speed and get a run, you know, coming out of turn one into turn mm-hmm. two, out of turn two. But it's going to be tricky. I think just to be safe, I'll probably back my entry up a little bit. But you're right. It's not easy by any means. Some guys are going to be rapidly quick, you know, going into there and getting out of it. Yep. Some guys might be a little slow at just trying to conserve, you know, not losing their rear end on entry.
Yeah,
because there's a lot of camber in that corner too. So yeah, it's going to be something.
I not only back up my turn going in there. I usually park on the side and let everybody else go by, and then I take the turn and watch everybody else crash and go by them.
That's one way to do it. So, I mean, it might actually, I mean, we'll see what happens. It could be a benefit to me starting in the pit lane. I'm ashamed to do it, but I mean, James hit the nail on the head. Nobody here gets any special treatment when it comes to the rules. I mean, our dad's experienced it. Eric laid down the law a couple times in global series. So, it is what it is, man. Nobody's above them. Admins and friends and family. So the rules are the rules, and everybody has to abide by them. So I appreciate James, you know, making that a point, and it is what it is. I'll start, you know, with my tail between my legs for a little bit and a little bit of shame. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah, that happened when I was running the Joe Six Pack Racing Series. There was one where they were doing the penalties, and I knew I was guilty of one. And then the guy in Ireland, our Irish guy, he was in charge of penalties for the league. And he says, "Well, Greg," he goes, "that was your fault." And I'm like, I'm right in the admins meeting. And I go, "No, it wasn't." They go, "What do you mean? We just showed you." "No, it wasn't my fault." He goes, "I just busting their chops." He goes, "We're going to give you a penalty." I go, "No, you're not." He goes, "What do you mean?" I says, "It's my league. You're not going to give me a penalty." He goes, "You're kidding, right?" I go, "Well, where do you want to start next week?" So, yeah, we did the same thing. I just had to give him a hard time and say, "Well, no, that wasn't my fault." He goes, "You turned right into him." I go, "No, I didn't."
Yeah, everybody, like, at first was like, "Oh, I don't know." And then a couple guys were like, "Well, if you look at it from this angle, blah, blah, blah." Mm-hmm. So, like, everybody was like, "No, yeah, I think that's deserving of a penalty." And Colin Huffman, our camera guy, was in there. He said, "No comment." And I said, "Everybody but Colin is now fired." And I was like, "Colin, there you go. You're going to have to wear a lot of hats, buddy." But funny. It's no big deal. We move on, and it is what it is.
Yeah, you just have to have fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right, James, back to you.
Yeah, it's great. Well, I mean, that pretty much sums up our weekend at Spa. Only one other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this goes for every race, not only at Spa, but if you'll notice that some of the finishing order on the race control report had Josh Bloom and Matt Schlosser in fourth and fifth. But apparently after the race, there are some post-race penalties that gave him a 35-second penalty. And so I did do some homework. And I looked up sporting code 3.6.2 mentions that the incident points still count after the checkered flag has waved up until the last person crosses the line. So those guys got a little bit of a penalty, which actually boosted Max Bauer from sixth place to fourth place. So Max Bauer gets fourth place points for this race, even though he finished sixth, 47 seconds behind the leader. So that's just something for the road course guys, especially to keep in mind going forward. I think there may have been some, you know, celebration post-race afterwards, or maybe even some donuts and off tracks that pushed him over the limit for the penalties off tracks. And cost him 35 seconds after the finish. So, you know, it's really there for safety. I've done some more reading. You know, guys that are driving, finish their cool down lap, you know, still have their force feedback and steering wheel in their hand. And if you're celebrating, or even maybe more importantly in the official lobbies, you know, and if you're mad at somebody and you rear end them or shove them into the wall, it could really affect their hands or their wrists or their fingers while their hands are gripping on the wheel. So I don't know if you've ever had anybody road rage on you after the race and it jerked the wheel out from you unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. It's not a pleasant feeling, but goes toward your incidents. So incidents count all the way until the other way to tell is if the last person goes across the line, if the counter resets to 15 minutes. So as they're counting down after the race, once it goes back to 15 minutes, then the incident points are done. Everybody's crossed the line.
That's a good point, not to start celebrating too soon. Or if you cross the finish line, and even in a oval course, it's the same thing. And then you get on the back stretch, and there's some guy smoking, and he can't hold his line, and he runs into you. That's going to hurt your IR and your put. And it's just like... That's why I usually either eject or get right back to pull into the pits and then get out and save it till later if I win the rare times I do win. So good report, James. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks again for having us. Hopefully we can make this a weekly thing. I'd love to come back.
Oh, definitely will.
Keep you guys updated on the road series.
Sure. The more the better. Like I said, this is your show. I just provide the platform and engage with what's going on, and it's a lot of fun. So, as he said, this week heading into Suzuka with a tough turn one with Johan de Roy leading the pro division and David Wortmann leading the amateur division. And I was looking at the race finale, and like everybody said earlier, there's a lot of the good AM drivers that are giving the pro division a run for the money. So let's take a look at the truck series, which we already did with Dustin in here. He won the duels at Daytona. And this week, October 13th, season opens at Daytona with a 75-lap run. And there's no truck series points this week with the duels. And checking out Xfinity. The Daytona duel winner for Xfinity was Drew Alvarez. He will start the pole on October 14th at Daytona with a 60-lap run there. And taking a look at the Cup race from last night, the winner, Justin Thaler. Justin, talk about your race last night. I was hearing some chatter after the race that there was some bumping and grinding near the finish line.
Not for me. So, I mean, my race went well. Kind of the same boat as Dustin. Didn't really have that good of a qualifying. I think I started like, I don't know, fifth or seventh, one of the two. But just pushing whoever I could. There's a pretty long run there. I was pushing Dad, and we kind of got separated. And then I was pushing John Bates for a while. Him and I were working pretty well. That first caution came out. You stayed out. I think everybody else went in for fuel. So turned it into, you know, just a pretty much a splash at that point to make it to the end after that. Mm-hmm. Came out of the pit. I cycled with John, and another gentleman followed us in, and John and I got separated, and I don't know if he just had a slow exit out of his pit box, or I know at least when I was practicing that pit exit around turn one was like driving on ice. So
yes, it was.
You had to kind of have some cojones to really carry some speed while you're trying to stall the wheel.
Yep.
You know, and not lose any more time. But came out, and basically we were a two car pack at that point, and there was, I think, a pack of four pretty far out ahead of us. Managed to, and they were on a different pit cycle, so we managed to get by them. But I don't know. I wasn't. I thought whoever finished second, and I wish I could remember his name right now, but I'm drawing a blank. I think it was Mankowski, John, maybe.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. But yeah, like, which is, you know, wasn't getting much help. So I didn't know if he was just uncomfortable pushing or not, but he said he had a fun run, and I told him, you know, don't be afraid to put a bumper and try and push me. But it was a super speedway. I mean, you work with who you can, and again, just to kind of reiterate Dustin's point, it was a short one, so you kind of got to make hay when you can. So not trying to be overly aggressive, you know, because it's not going to matter to the last lap, but somehow I was able to hold on to it, but it was fun. Haven't raced oval since really the last season ended, so it was fun to kind of jump back into it, get a little different than what I'm used to on Tuesday nights. So I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it will be fun. And talking about coming out of the pits, there's one place where if you're going too fast coming on the pits, you almost get thrown up above the yellow line that I've noticed a couple times. You know, if your wheels touch it, I'm like, oh crap, I'm gonna get a black flag. But it seems that iRacing's pretty lenient there. But yeah, it's hairy coming out of there. And just when you think you can floor it and get up to speed, that's when your inertia or something like that, you hit that little bump and it throws you pretty close to the yellow line.
Yeah, I was just taking third gear. And what I was trying to do was basically hug the grass as much as I could without getting onto it. And just work your throttle and stall the wheel just a little bit to be able to carry a little bit more speed. Keep that front end pointed. And then that's how I managed to get out. But Yeah, it was fun, and I'm looking forward to next week, and trucks will be a little different because I'll be at the back since I missed, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, speaking of obscure penalties, did you know that if you go on the grass, I'm not talking Talladega or Daytona, maybe even there too, if you go on the grass to try to cool your tires down, iRacing will give you a black flag for that?
Oh, that's interesting. I know there's a lot of stuff around the code of conduct during like the Daytona 24, and I want to say it was like the Williams Pro Team. Basically, they got a pretty. There was a lot of people coming out on social media, kind of telling them they're blatantly cheating for. I think they're running like the apron around the part of the road course. I want to say it's.
Yep, I remember.
You know,
that.
Coming out of four to the front stretch or something, but yeah, Tony Kanaan and a lot of big names were basically calling them out, calling them cheaters for breaking the code of conduct in that race. So there's some things you got to be careful about. But yeah. I didn't know that you'd get the black flag for attempting to cool your tires.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it until somebody said, "What the heck?" And that's what it was. I could not believe that you could actually cool your tires by going down on the grass, but it makes sense. And when you're talking about that Williams Racing, the team owner, he fessed up to it, and they said after watching the review, they agreed, and I think they got rid of a couple drivers that were doing it, as I recall.
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, you know, a lot of guys take it... I mean, a lot of guys are very talented at this hobby and good for them. And, you know, I'm not taking that away from them. But, you know, if you're that good at it, you don't really need to be exploiting anything, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So. Well, I guess on the upper echelons, there's some pretty good prize money now. I remember watching during COVID when I think it was Fox that was running iRacing during the NASCAR slots. And... I remember one of the bigger races, the 17-year-old racing in his bedroom won $40,000, and you're watching his webcam, and there's his dog walking back and forth all the time, and then it got close to the end of the race, and you could see there's his dresser, and there's his bed right next to where he's racing, and as it got close to the end, I guess his parents in the other room were watching on TV, and they realized he had a good chance of winning, so they all came in his room and stood around his rig.
Hey, man, if you can do it, more power to you.
Yeah, and I was sitting there with my son watching it, and I'm like, these guys, here's all the Fox newscasters or the broadcasters said, they're narrating a cartoon, because that's what it looked like. And then then when they showed the kid and the dog walking back and forth, it was such satire, because the dog kept walking back and forth. And there's his mom in the back, you know, getting snacks and stuff. And I'm like, this kid's in his bedroom. He's got, I don't know, tens of thousands of people watching him. And it was great. So what's your any strategy for Sunday night coming up?
Well, I don't know, man. We'll see what happens. Hopefully lead a couple laps and just try and just get stage points in all three stages. And I mean, at one of these, you either want to be out front or near the back. So as long as I can stay out of trouble and hopefully guys have a lot of patience and work with other guys. I mean, I'm not afraid to go 2-3 wide. But as long as you can trust the drivers around you not to get too squirrely, we'll see what happens. There's a couple guys I'd like to be around just because I know you know, they'll all work with whoever. So sure. If we can all kind of get linked up, it'll be good.
Yeah, it seems to be either want to be up front and their back. You never want to be in the middle, which kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm probably least looking forward to the truck race, to be honest. I know the last couple seasons there at the Super Speedways, it's a train, and it's really hard to kind of make headway and get a couple positions. So, the cup cars will be a little bit different, but just stay with the pack, not lose the draft, and we'll see what happens.
Yep. Oh, if you lose the draft, you're screwed.
Absolutely.
Or you, if you lose the draft, you get that one guy that's like 3 seconds ahead of you, and he won't slow down to let you catch up, understanding it's going to help both of them. Because, you know, I've had that happen sometimes. I'm like, you know, private messaging him or something. Hey, why don't you slow down and let me catch up? No, no, I'm not going to do it. You're just going to try to pass me. Yeah, okay, dude.
That's it's hard to, you know, the best thing you can hope for is like if you're chasing a pack and there's maybe two you guys linked together, that those guys start going too wide and trying to jump, you know, mm-hmm. positions left and right and hopefully catch up to them. But we'll see. I'm excited for it. I mean, it's always fun to just be able to race regardless of what length of track
that
it is.
Oh, that is so true. Yep. You like the high line or the low line?
Preferably the low line. The yellow is your best friend. So we'll see what happens. It's going to depend kind of on who's where. If I see some guys that I know are trustworthy in a high line, I'll jump up there and, you know, we'll see it. I don't have any problem running low, middle, or high. So it's all gonna depend on who's where and what's going on, you know, at that point. And I just hope guys are aware, you know, when you're coming up and you got about 4 laps of fuel left, you know, you really gotta get to the bottom, whether you gotta lose some spots or not. And mm-hmm. you know, you're not gonna make it in the pit lane from the middle or the high side if there's traffic. So
that's very true.
Hopefully guys play nice and we don't have any incidents with that. So I know Eric's looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, super speedways are kind of not my thing.
I like them, but I just don't understand all the wrecks at Talladega and Daytona. And it's like I guess it's just happens because everybody likes to drive fast.
Yeah, I tend to not go to the doctors after a super speedway race because my blood pressure is so high.
I tell you, if you get in some of those races, are long races and they're tough and competitive. I'm exhausted at the end of the race. I don't know how the real drivers do it in the real cars. Mm-hmm. We're real fake drivers, but the guys in the cars. Not only are they dealing with, you know, the pressure and stuff like that, it's 130 degrees in there, but a lot of times I am exhausted at the end of a race, especially a tight race where there's a lot of bumping and grinding, and it's pack racing an hour and a half. I'm ready to go to bed after that.
Right.
Oh, yeah. And you're white knuckling and everything else, just trying to hold it straight or bump somebody and not, you know, hit them in the quarter just that little bit that'll cause anything. But yeah, I'm right there with you, man. I'm right there with you.
It's almost like you want to just get out of the pack and sit in the back and take a break for a minute and then get back into it. So opening week is this weekend, October 15th. Lobby opens at 7 o'clock. Daytona 100 laps, and we're still taking members all season. You want to give any information for anybody that's listening out there how to join?
Yeah, absolutely. As always, you head over to midwest-motorsports.com and select the sign up button up in the top bar. You'll find it down in the body of the website, but a lot of information on the page if you're just curious of what tracks we run and what our schedule is. You know, you can hit the series and kind of check it out, but super important to head over to that sign up page, and all the information's there to get you in the right places. So remember, midwest-motorsports.com.
Very good. Well, hey guys, this was a great show. I love the idea of the weekly update, so everybody doesn't have to listen to me flapping my jaws all night, and James does a really good job and loves to get into the details of it, so I think that's a great addition. I'm looking forward to next week.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if I might say, I just want to thank those guys in the broadcast team, James, Colin, and Josh for doing what they do for getting our races out there for people to see. We've actually hit record numbers, you know, on our Twitch streams last couple of weeks between trucks and our road series. So they brought so much to the league, and I just really hope they understand how much we appreciate them and value them here. And I know that Dustin said he wasn't a Denny Hamlin fan. He's just the biggest Denny Hamlin fan. So I just want everybody to know that.
Well, they do now.
Yep. And with that, all my comments are done.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Have a good night. You've been listening to the Cool Down Lap, the official podcast of Midwest Motorsports. Want to get a plug-in for Track Racer. They support our league. And if you want some really cool sim racing equipment, head over to Track Racer. And everything you buy, and you mention Midwest Motorsports, or if there's a code or something, you can probably find it on our webpage. You enter that, and the league gets a cut back to offset expenses and such like that. So this has been the Cool Down Lap, and it will be up on Twitch for another 2 weeks. It'll be on YouTube forever, and it will be uploaded tomorrow morning to Spotify, where you can listen to it on all the major podcasting platforms. I'm Greg Dreis, your host. This has been a production of the Sim Racing Podcast, and we look forward to chatting again next Monday night with a review of all four leagues and our new weekly series with James Johnson, the voice of Midwest Motorsports, with the Road Series weekly update. Until then, stay in your lane, and we'll see you on the track, and have a good night. Goodbye.